where strategy gaming meets good vibes. No stress, just critical moves. Welcome back to the Critical Moves podcast, where tonight we're going to be talking about the best strategy games of 2024. There's been a hell of a lot of great games coming out in the last year, today's opportunity to talk about the ones that we think have been truly epic titles. I'm Al, and I'm joined tonight by Nuno.
Hello, everyone.
And Tim.
Good day, everyone.
Tim is going to start us off with what he thinks is one of the best games of 2024.
Right, so when you ask that, you're asking about the game that I enjoyed the most, right? Or are you asking about the game that I think is the best overall?
You just do what you want to do.
All right. Well, in that case, I'm going to say the game that I enjoyed a lot that came out this year, Songs of Conquest. To me, this was a really, really fun game. A fresh take on the old formula of Heroes of Might and Magic, a formula that worked really, really well, and it gave it a complete new spin. Beautiful to look at. Even if you're never going to play the game, I recommend just to go have a look at the screenshots, at some videos. Absolute beautiful pixel art. And it's not just a pretty face. It actually gave a lot of cool new mechanics. The spell casting system is innovative. How the units function in the battles is well done. Like, there's a lot of thought put to it. And so, really good release. Flew under the radar a lot, I think, but super fun.
So what makes it stand out?
So, like I mentioned, it's beautiful, but what I liked about it so much and what I feel like makes it stand out from the huge amount of Heroes of Might and Magic games that are out now is that, yeah, it feels like the mechanics of the battles and even of the campaign map, they're clever. And you're playing it and you're trying to figure out how the system works. It's a little bit different from what you're used to. And it suddenly clicks together and it makes sense, and you're wondering, like, wait a minute, why are the other similar games not like this? Why did they not implement these mechanics?
What kind of mechanics are you talking about?
So, for example, a lot of units have... So it's a tactics-based, turn-based battle, and those battles... you can cast as many spells as you want, but depending on how many units you have, you gain mana for casting spells. So it's not just one spell a turn. It's like depending on how big your army is. So you're incentivized to have a big army, even if you're heavy into spell casting. Furthermore, if your units wait, that's not necessarily a bad thing, and it is a bad thing, so it's okay if you move forward during your turn. Whereas with the other games, you're kind of incentivized to wait, and then everyone kind of waits around. And this is done through a maximum range of the units, so even your archer units, they want to move forward. So it's not like a game of chicken, seeing who's going to move forward first. A lot of things like that I think is really well done. One last mechanic I would say is... if one of your stacks dies, the enemy gains momentum. So you're not incentivized to have like lots of small stacks of units, something that you did in the old games to kind of distract the other one, to be a bit of a gaming the system, and this avoids that a bit. So, overall, like really well done, well thought out mechanics that make the game enjoyable to me.
I have just played a couple of hours of it. And what stood out to me the most was the pixelated graphics, because they look absolutely gorgeous. I never clicked with the campaign. I think I played the first act, which is like some 5-6 missions, I think, in total. But then after that, I just fell off. But I think the graphics are just outstanding. They're doing really, really good.
So what you've described there then, Tim, is you're almost incentivized to have a bit of a doom stack going on.
That's a general idea behind these games, I would say. But there is a counter mechanic to that, and that is that the amount of slots that your champion has is very limited. And when your hero levels up, you can try to increase its magic, try to increase the damage that units make or its movement speed, or you can increase how many stacks you're allowed to carry with. So that heavily limits that doom stacking, actually.
And how important, you say this is based on the Heroes of Might and Magic series. How important is magic in this game?
I kind of like how it's not at all obligatory to go with magic, such as Heroes of Might and Magic. You can totally forego leveling into it, and then it's like a minor thing, and rely more heavily on your troops. Or you can lean totally into it. But so it's not mandatory, the whole magic thing. And it's really fun to play as well. Local co-op, offline it has, or local against each other. You can play on one screen with a controller. The controller plays really well as well. Like, it's very easy to use the controller. So you can be on the sofa an afternoon with a friend while you're having some snacks and pass the controller around. And pretty fun.
That's interesting, because I think that we always think of strategy games as being quite reliant upon mouse and keyboard interface, but it works quite well with the controller.
Because it's turn-based, so that's what makes it good with the controller.
So, but not in any way, shape or form dumbed down.
No.
If you can do everything with the controller.
No, absolutely not, no. So what about you, Al? What games did you enjoy in 2024? What games did pop up on your radar?
One which, ironically, another game which is really good with a controller is Empire of the Ants, which has come out very recently from Microids. Have you played this one?
I've seen it. I haven't played it. Is it any good?
I have seen a couple of gameplays of it. I think, I'm being very superficial today. I think the graphics look fantastic because they're photorealistic. But I haven't played it, and from the videos I saw of it, I couldn't figure out how you play the game because it looks very confusing.
It's probably the one of the most interesting strategy games that has come out this year. A lot of the reason for that is because it is played from the perspective of the ant. You're right about the photorealism, and it does look absolutely beautiful. Now, when you guys were talking about Songs of Conquest looking gorgeous, I was in the back of my mind saying, "Well, graphics don't make a good game," and generally get on my high horse about about those kind of things, which is, as you all know, something that I do quite a lot. But Empire of the Ants is just glorious to look at. You could actually just spend hours just being immersed in this world, all from the perspective of one of the tiniest creatures.
And that's kind of rare, no? That's kind of rare for strategy games. Like, usually strategy games are not so graphical, and then I guess with both Songs of Conquest and Empire of the Ants, it's very beautiful.
So maybe we're seeing a shift in the genre towards being more visually appealing. But the one thing that really stands out about Empire of the Ants is that there's no godlike overview. You don't get a bird's eye view of the battlefield. You can only see what you can see from the perspective of your commander unit. You can only attack or defend what you can see from the perspective of your commander unit. So you spend your time split between either being back at the nest in order to build new units, build more defenses, or on the front lines commanding your particular groups of warriors or artillery to attack the enemy nests. You can't be in two places at once.
That sounds challenging, no?
It is. You've got to really think about placement.
Is it ever frustrating?
I didn't find it frustrating because there's a lot of joy in just traveling across the map. Yeah. You know, when you see, and it's strange, you know, butterflies flying over or bees flying over, and just stopping and looking at these at these things as they go past. There's always something to see, something to experience. There was never moments where I was like frustrated, as you might expect to happen. And yeah. And I think it's because they've made it look so fantastic, so gorgeous, that you don't have those moments of frustration. Just moving from the back of your base where you're building a new unit to the front lines to be able to command your ant armies, just the journey is a great experience.
But how's the progression of it? So let's say you start a mission, and do you evolve anything, or it's just combat based all around? So do you have to go back to your hive and build new stuff? How does that work?
You have to take over nests, and for each nest you can have additional units to be able to use in the battles. The progression is you would take over an enemy nest, which then gives you more units to be able to move on and take over other nests. You often have objectives to build different higher powered types of ants, which are needed to take over more powerful enemies. So there is some progression, but it is certainly not the most complex of titles. You know, this is not grand strategy. It is a solid action RTS game, which I think as long as you take it on face value and expect as much, it's a really enjoyable game to play.
From what you're describing, it's reminding me of an older title called, I'm not sure if you guys played, called Tooth and Tail.
Where you Tooth and Tail, yeah, that was fun, yeah.
It was very similar to that because you controlled an animal. I think they were rats, I think. There were lots of animals. And with your main animal, you would go around and gather other animals, and like you would order one unit to do that, order another to do something else, and
which actually also made it a good controller-based strategy game, because you had to walk around, right, and then you that's the interesting part I thought about it, is that you walk around. And you can play it very casually, like a controller, like your ants, I guess. Yeah? And I guess that's what you were trying to say, Nino.
Yeah, I think it's very similar. I guess this is the kind of game that would work great on a controller. And I think that one of the reasons why Tooth and Tail played like that, it was because it was one of those first games that tried to simplify, quote-unquote, the RTS controls, because I think the game is almost 10 years old as of right now. And I think it worked great because the game came out in consoles, I think. But yeah, from what Al was describing, I think that they're very similar.
Do you think we're seeing a shift in accessibility in RTS games? You know, yes, you look at some of the titles which are coming out, like there's Battle Aces, where battles only take maximum 10 minutes, and it's designed to be played with a controller and cross-platform. Do you think we're seeing a shift towards RTS games or strategy games in general being made more accessible? And if so, do you think that's a good thing that's happening?
You also have the Paradox games and all of the other grand strategy games that are going the complete opposite way, right?
As in they're becoming more and more complex.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and those big Paradox games, you didn't have those that complex and that intricate as you do now. And so I mean, also, there's people are learning to design games in a way, right? And that's what happens a lot with a lot of these things, is people are seeing what works, what's good, learning from other games and then adapting that. So maybe people are making better games, better and better.
I suppose if you're learning how to design a game, it's going to be quite simplistic to begin with. I don't know, on that subject of people learning to design games, let's talk about one of the biggest strategy games to be released this year, which is Mana Lords.
Right.
I don't think any top games of 2024 list would be complete without Mana Lords being mentioned. Nuno, what do you think of Mana Lords?
I think it is one of the best medieval strategy games of all time. In its currently early access state, I think it's so it has a lot of stuff that I enjoyed as someone who really loves history. It's something that tingles my brain in just the right way. But I can see how some of this stuff might not make a lot of sense for people who don't know a lot about that. Nor do they should. It's a game after all. But I think the game has a lot of there's a lot of love for the historical sources and the fact that the game is built around. So what is Mana Lords? Maybe we start with that too. It is a city builder slash RTS medieval set in the medieval period game, and you're basically just building your own town. You can set up your services. You can set up your homes, your industries, and everything will develop from there. And then you build your armies, and then as soon as you start to reach the late game, you'll start to fight in really well made RTS battles. In fact, because they're really good. And I think there's one thing that I really love about the title is the way that it does. How does it simulate economy? Because it understands that in medieval times, right, like people had their means of providing for themselves right at home, right? So you have your house, and inside your home, you would have your plot of land. You cultivate your vegetables. You would have your, if you could be working as a tanner, you could be working as a blacksmith or whatever. You would be working from home, and the game builds on top of that. So whenever you're building a house in the game, you're actually also building your economy on top of that. So you can go to the ridiculous extent where you wouldn't even need communal farming in the game if you want to survive in the long run, because you can just attribute massive plots of land to your own people, and they would just go to their day-to-day jobs, if you can call it that, or their communal jobs in the town, and then they will go home at the end of the day, and they will start to plant their vegetables or take care of their animals. And I think it's a fantastic title.
What was the main appeal of Mana Lords? I mean, it had 3 million wish lists. It sold incredibly well for an early access title. And this is an indie game being developed by one person. What was the appeal of it? Because when I first saw Mana Lords, I thought, oh, that looks okay. But I wasn't incredibly excited by it. So what does it do?
To me, what it does well is it simulates. And it simulates a certain reality, and it makes you be able to feel like you were there, and you make decisions relative to what you think people at the time would kind of make decisions and so on. And I think that's a big appeal, and that's what classic RTS misses a bit, is like it's very arcade-like, it's very gamey, whereas Mana Lords, it's still gamey. It still has big gamey elements, but it goes more in the direction of simulation, of believability. And I think, Nino, you addressed that as well with like historical accuracy. I mean, obviously it's not like a historical game, but it brings up a lot of historic elements that were absent in a lot of the other games.
Because it brings like real historical elements, like these kinds of mortgage plots are the basis of the game, and you need to... I love the fact that the developer actually made that a primary point of his title, that, okay, the game is going to be built around that. The game works really well, and the fact that they actually went out and they scan real houses, they scan real archaeological sites. I think it had a lot of authenticity to it, but I also think the game was massively successful because it promised to be something that Total War wasn't going to be. I wouldn't say it was promising, but I'd say that if most of your marketing material emphasizes the combat of the game, and those battles, like on the trailer, they look absolutely amazing, and they are. I think people started to see it as a kind of Total War or alternative.
And the game isn't finished yet. It's still in early access, and there's still updates going on, isn't there? Is it right that it was recently upgraded to Unreal Engine 5?
I wouldn't have that info specifically. If I can be counterpointing it a little bit before we move on. To me, I wasn't able to put that many hours in the game, I'll be honest, and I'm not sure how replayable it was for me. It felt a lot like Banished, and I think they must have gotten quite some inspiration from Banished. They did add combat, and it is a bit more than Banished, but after I've played it and I've made it, so to speak, I'm not sure I want to do that again.
Would you say it was primarily a colony sim or a city builder, or would you say it was primarily an RTS game?
Oh, definitely a city builder.
I appreciate there's elements of both, but you think it's more of a city builder than it is, say, an RTS game?
To me, it is it is both and not succeeding at either. That's my issue with it.
So that's a very interesting point then, isn't it? Is it trying to be too much
and failing?
It could be an exceptional city builder, or it could be an exceptional RTS game, or it could be the quintessential replacement for Total War that we've been crying out for since episode 4.
I'm ready to see where it goes after early access, but as it is now, for me, there's not enough there to keep playing this and keep coming back to it.
All right. Nuno, tell us which game has stood out for you this year.
Oh, aside from Manor Lords, I would have to probably go back to the beginning of the year and bring maybe obscure title called Classified Friends 44. And what it is an XCOM. Like it's basically XCOM. It plays pretty much like XCOM, but it's set on World War II, and you're dropped behind enemy lines 60 days before the D-Day invasion. And what you have to do is work with the resistance, and you have three different factions in the resistance. You have to work with them to sabotage the German army efforts to repel the invasion, right? So they don't know the invasion is coming, but what you're doing is that you're laying the groundwork for the invasion to be successful. And the meta layer of the title of the game is basically every time you move a turn, it counts down one day. So you have several options and several things you can do. Like you have intel missions, you have turn-based tactical missions like XCOM. You also manage your units, you equip them, you change their weapons, their gear, you level them up. So it's basically just XCOM in World War II, but with a really well done strategic layer, because I wasn't expecting it to be that, I would say flavorful. So I think it picks up on the theme and it executes as well on it. With that countdown mechanic, I think it's really good. And then you have things like if you raise your activity on one location way too much, then the Germans will try to move there and try to disrupt your operation. So yeah.
So if I've played XCOM, why do I need to play Classified France 44?
It sounds like for the World War II part, right?
But that's just a reskin, isn't it?
Not necessarily, because the battles are super different. I guess weapons are different. The weapon systems are totally different from XCOM. So you're not fighting aliens. They don't have the Nazis don't have psionic abilities in this game. They can't mind control your unit, so it's very different. And the meta layer is super different as well. I think that the basic gameplay is very similar because you have like two moves per unit per turn. And I would say that the difference is on those small details. I think you could argue that, yeah, it's similar to XCOM, the same way that Stronghold is similar to Age of Empires or something like that.
So what sets it apart from XCOM?
I think it is the team. I think the World War team is super interesting. And if you win...
So nothing then, no?
that does sound like exactly what we were saying about Ariskin, no?
Like I said, the turn-based battles are not the same thing, because it's one thing to be fighting an alien with psionic abilities, and it's another thing to just be in a gunfight. Right. So, and also, I think I should mention that it has a lot of stealth as well. So the mission starts stealthful. I would say that if the game's on sale, if you like World War II, if you like XCOM, you would be missing out on a really, really good title.
Okay. We can't talk about the best strategy games of 2024 without mentioning Age of Mythology Retold.
Wait, I'm sorry. Did you say the best games of 2024 or the best game of 2002? I didn't hear that quite right.
Funnily enough, Tim, I was just about to come to you to say, tell me why you don't think that this should count, and then we'll tell you why you're wrong.
Sure. I mean, it's a great game. It's fun. They're adding things to it. They're adding DLC as well to it. So they're going to keep going with that. It's a good game. I want something new. I've played that game. I've made those decisions. I've had that fun. And I want something new. New mechanics, new environments, new theme. I would play it for the nostalgia factor, sure. If I had never played that game and I'm looking at what to play this year for something that came out recently, I would not recommend people to go to this very old game with a very old formula.
But Nuno, you really enjoyed Retold, didn't you?
Yeah, because I really enjoyed the original as well, and what I was looking for was just the original Age of Mythology, but with a new coat of paint, and I think they nailed it. I would have disliked it a lot if they touched on the fundamentals of the game, and I'm so glad they didn't, because they did a fantastic job.
Let's say that you're talking to someone who's never played Age of Mythology. Would you recommend that game to them, or would you recommend a new game?
I would recommend Age of Mythology. If you like something, I would say that if you like RTSs, I think Age of Mythology is a very important piece of history in the RTS genre. So when they were transitioning from 2D to 3D, and the game did a lot of things right. So the fundamentals were really good. The story, the mythology aspect of it was well done. Yeah, the story is fantastic. It's a massive story. I think it has over 20 missions, right? So, and you don't see a lot of that.
So the story is really good, but it was also really good in 2002.
Yeah. I agree. I think it was and still is today. If you haven't tried, I think it's worth just for the story alone. If you like mythology, and if you like RTS, I think you're gonna love the game. It's worth just for the single player alone. And they keep adding stuff. So they just added 35 new skirmish. I think it's called the Arena of the Gods. I haven't played it. But that's
the new DLC, isn't it?
It's not. It's a free update. And they had 35 new skirmish missions, I think. So that's a lot of new content. And the game. Don't forget that the game also has a new unseen campaign. So that's also another reason to play it in 2024. But you were saying you don't agree with that, Tim?
Well, it's just that it's not a fresh game to me, and it's very fun. Like you said, the story is really, really good. It's very fun, well made, Yeah, but we're talking about games from 2024, you know? Like, so to me, I would want, if we're talking about the best game of 2024, I would want something new and fresh.
Yeah, I think it's a fair point. I think it's a fair point, yeah. But still, it's still a fantastic title. And if you like mythology and RTSs, go try Age of Mythology Retold. No reason to go back to the 2002 one, because this is so much better.
It is, it is.
So, Tim, you only want to look at games which are unique to 2024. What would be the next one that you would pick out for mention in the top games of 2024?
Well, sure, I can contradict myself, and there's still something like Frostpunk 2 that came out this year. That being said, Frostpunk 2 is not Frostpunk 1 with some a tiny little bit different. I really liked what they did, and I missed that a lot in sequels to games. Frostpunk 2 kind of shifted the whole gameplay a bit, like. The scale is different. The decisions you make is different. It has new mechanics in it. It has new ways to play. This whole political aspect of it is revamped. And I think that was really well done for a sequel. Oftentimes, I look at a sequel and I'm not looking forward to it because I think I'm just going to play the same game again, but just new missions or something like that. And a tiny little mechanic that's a bit different. But I didn't have that feeling with Frostpunk 2.
I guess it was just a step up in the scale, isn't it, compared to the original game?
And I like that.
And do you not think that it loses some of the charm by taking on a larger scale?
So it could have done the opposite. It could have tried like a lower scale, and I think it would have worked as well. I'm going to say that I didn't play it twice. I played it once. I wouldn't want to play it again, I don't think. Or maybe in quite some time. So perhaps that's due to this distance that you have to the people, like you mentioned. But then again, Frostpunk 1 I could only play once as well.
I suppose it was quite a bold move by 11-Bit Studios to take the scale up a notch like they did. It would have been so easy for them to just rehash Frostpunk 1 with
a new story
set of
or
scenarios or whatever.
And I would have criticized them for that, and now I'm praising them. So,
well, I'm sure they'll be over. I'm sure they'll be over over the moon with them such praise. Does it not remove a lot of the? Does it not remove one of the key things which made Frostpunk, the original, such a great game in terms of the challenge of the encroaching storm, the challenge of the survival? My understanding is that Frostpunk 2 is more about the political aspects of the game.
It is. In terms
of factions and managing the needs and desires of individual factions rather than it being a case of it's your colony and it's surviving against the elements. With Frostpunk 2, it's your colony and you're trying to find your way in between these different factions.
No, the survival aspect is there still immensely. It's just that one of the many threats that you're facing is this political upheaval. So people go into ideological factions, and whichever direction you're going with, some people could be really upset with that. And then you have to kind of manage that social aspect of it. But it's not like social aspect of individuals, but social aspect of the group. Which is the scale difference. And then what's to me really fun is you're playing a bit more of a politician, but your colony can go tits up very, very easily and very quickly. And you still have to manage that and it's a different challenge, and that's why I like it and that's why I find it fresh, is that you're making different kind of decisions.
One of the things which I think really stood out about Frostpunk, the original Frostpunk, was the moral aspects of your decisions, because every single worker, engineer, workers, child, they were all individually simulated. They all had their own names. They all had their backstories. I mean, that seems to be lost in Frostpunk 2 with the increased scale.
Yeah, but again, then you gain this same kind of moral decisions. But yeah, I mean, are we going with more of a traditional approach and in a more intuitive way, in a more grand scale thing? Or are we going with innovation? And I mean, today's politics, I don't think we need to go into that, but it is more divisive than ever before. And then this kind of... Yeah, it gives you this divisiveness that you have, that politics can give you, and this difficulty that you can have in making decisions. And you know that no matter what decision you're making, there's going to be a large group of people that are going to be very upset at that. And then you have to manage them, basically, and not manage individuals, but more like general direction of which way your society is going towards.
Nuno, has there been any games which have surprised you this year?
Oh, surprises. I think 2024 didn't bring a lot of surprises because the games we were expecting to be good were good, and the ones that we were expecting to be bad were bad. So what surprised me was the fact that Sea Power, Naval Combat in the Missile Age, came out this year because I really wasn't expecting it to come out. I was... until a couple of weeks before it came out, I was expecting it to come out sometimes in 2025, maybe late 2025, and the fact that it came to early access this year, it was really surprising, and I can't say that I'm surprised at the fact that it's really well made, because it's being built by the lead designer of Cold Waters, which was also a fantastic title that came out. I don't know when, maybe 2017 or something. And what it is, it's a naval combat simulation set during the Cold War, very much in the vein of Harpoon. You're basically managing your fleet, the weapon systems in your fleet, the planes in your fleet, and you're just fighting naval battles against the Warsaw Pact. And it has fantastic graphics. The gameplay is really intuitive, and it's very... I would say it's very in-depth because each weapon system is simulated individually. But I would say the game has something of a learning curve right now, because in the early access, you could say that the tutorial is lacking a bit. So... there's some growing pains, but I think that if you can endure it, the game is super intuitive to play, and the controls are very simple. It just plays like a basic RTS, but the game could do a better job at conveying information to you to let you know what weapon system does, why should you use it, why shouldn't you use it. So you need to have some knowledge about how these things work, and since I don't, it's basically trial and error until I won my first battle. But I think the game is very promising. So it's in early access, but I think it's going to grow tremendously.
It's it harks back to what was discussed in episode 3 about fun and realism in games. From what you've described there, you're not entirely sure how the weapon systems work. It's very much a simulator. Some people have mentioned it's like Microsoft Flight Simulator in terms of its complexity. Is it still fun if it's so super realistic?
It's not super realistic. The gameplay is at a very arcadey pace, so it's not like you're playing something like Command Modern Operations, where it has a very obtuse UI. You feel like you're playing with a military simulator, because you are. But in Cold Water, this is clearly a customer first product, so they're building this for war gamers. They're not building this for the military, mainly because it's an historical title.
Okay, but it's also not World of Warships, right?
Oh, it's very different because World of Warships is an arcade, is an action game.
So
this is a strategy game. I would say that this is a mix between RTS, like a classical RTS, and war games, a real-time war gaming, because like you basically control your units on a map. Like you move them, you just set waypoints for them with your right clicks, and they'll go there. You use your left click to select the weapon systems and the target, and the thing just plays out. Of course, it's super complex because you're managing individual weapon systems, and you need to know. I think the challenge on the game is on knowing these weapon systems and how they interact with each other. So, what kind of weapon system counters your opponent's weapon system? So, if you're like a hardware geek that really loves reading about how these ships were equipped, why this missile does that, and what kind of matchup can you use it against? I think you're gonna love the game, and the game is gonna grow a lot, and it's gonna have a campaign. It's gonna have like an evolving campaign, or then a procedurally generated campaign. Is that it? So there's still a lot of growing for the game to be made, and it's very bare bones at the moment. So you have I think it's 10 or 12 scenarios for you to play around with. But then you need to make your own if you want to have fun.
So you said Warsaw Pact. So I imagine it's like a NATO versus Warsaw Pact kind of thing. But like, okay, Warsaw Pact's not very famous for their huge naval capabilities. Is it like an alternate historical scenario, or like what's the setting? Like what's the...
No, it's just that like the game is basically a toolbox for you to build your own. At the moment, of course, for you to build your own scenarios. So let's say you want...
But you mentioned it's going to feature a campaign or a...
Yeah, it's probably going to play... I don't know how it's going to play because it's still under development, but I would say it's going to play like World War II, but on the seas, and you're going to fight like the Warsaw or the NATO fleet because you can play as both. If you can, and I would highly suggest this game, Cold Waters is a submarine. I wouldn't call it a simulator, it's kind of arcadey. A submarine game made also by Killerfish. And I think it takes up the basics of what makes a good submarine game, and it implements it really well. It's super simple to play. You can just, like, you control your submarine with your WASD keys, and you just assign target, and it does a lot of stuff by itself. If you play that, you know how Sea Power is going to play. I would say that it really surprised me as to how they managed to keep the UI and the user experience of Cold Waters, because the game is very simple to pick up and play. But if you don't know a lot about naval warfare in the missile age, I think you're going to have a hard time with it, but that's part of the fun.
The last game on the list is one which is going to be quite divisive here. It's Sins of the Solar Empire 2. Now, Tim and I both played Sins of the Solar Empire, and it just didn't stick. And as a consequence, we've both avoided the sequel. But you've played it, Nuno, haven't you? What sets it apart from the first game?
Oh, like I told you guys, I have played just a couple of hours of the original. They didn't stick with me back then as well. But for some reason, Sins of a Solar Empire 2 did. It's not a perfect game by any means. I think one thing that the game is terribly missing is a proper full-length campaign. And without a campaign, I don't know.
Which is quite surprising, because the game was released, I think it was released a year ago on Epic, and it was released this year on Steam. So they've had a full year of early access with a significant player base, and you would have expected them to have put a campaign in that time.
I'm not sure what was the reason for not putting the campaign in, but I know they're developing it, so maybe it's going to come in the future. And I think it's a shame that the game didn't come out with the campaign, just because the setting is so interesting. So yeah, that really disappointed me. But again, I'm a sucker for games that have very intricate tactical systems, and I think Sins of a Solar Empire surprised me in that regard, because what I was expecting coming back to it, because I haven't played it for more than a decade, was some kind of very basic RTS where you just mash your ships together against other armies, and I was surprised the amount of depth the combat has. You need to make sure your ships have like long range. You need to make sure your fleet composition is properly balanced and that you have an answer for everything. I really wasn't expecting that. I was expecting it to be just like your basic rock, paper, scissors kind of RTS, and it really surprised me.
So that concludes our look back at the best strategy games of 2024. Do you agree? Do you disagree? Either way, come and tell us. If you visit criticalmovespodcast.com, you'll find all of the links to our social media, to our Discord. You can come and chat to us. You can come and tell us that you think we're fantastic and you agree with all of our choices, or obviously that we are shit and we don't know what we're talking about. Either's good. Feedback is always welcome. Before we sign off, Tim, I believe you've got a couple of others that you'd like to mention that we didn't include in our list.
So one is technically a DLC, but it is
a DLC.
It's a whole new campaign that is as large as the original, and that's Suzerain Kingdom of Rivia. It came out this year. It's a full new story, very fun. Changes quite a bit from the original. Recommend.
So that's that's the DLC for Suzerain. The DLC.
It is.
Okay.
Yeah. another quick mention, I would say Mechabellum, a tactics game. It's an auto chess game. It's pretty fun.
Excellent. Well, I think that just about concludes it. Nuno, did you want to do a gratuitous plug for your website?
Yes. Go and visit Strategy and Wargaming, because Daddy needs that ad money to pay his bills. So make sure you go there, strategyandwargaming.com. Click on every article you see. Leave a like, comment, share, subscribe, all that stuff.
Well, thanks very much for joining me, Nuno and Tim. We will be back next week with episode 8, which will be Morals in Wargaming. Mm-hmm. Should be very interesting. Looking forward to that one. Thanks very much. Take it easy, guys. I'll speak to you soon.
Cheers.
Yeah.